Simon & Schuster Audio presents Big Driver by Stephen King. Read by Jessica Hecht.
One. Tess accepted 12 compensated speaking engagements a year, if she could get them. At $1,200 each, that came to over $14,000. It was her retirement fund. She was still happy enough with the Willow Grove Knitting Society after 12 books, but didn't kid herself that she could go on writing them until she was in her 70s. If she did, what would she find at the bottom of the barrel? The Willow Grove Knitting Society goes to Terre Haute? The Willow Grove Knitting Society visits the International Space Station? No. Not even if the ladies' book societies, who are her mainstay, read them. And they probably would. No. So she was a good little squirrel, living well on the money her books brought in, but putting away acorns for the winter. Each year for the last 10, she had put between $12,000 and $16,000 into her money market fund. The total wasn't as high as she might have wished, thanks to the gyrations of the stock market. But she told herself that if she kept on plugging, she'd probably be all right. She was the little engine that could. And she did at least 3 events each year gratis to salve her conscience. That often annoying organ should not have troubled her about taking honest money for honest work, but sometimes it did. Probably because running her gums and signing her name didn't fit the concept of work as she had been raised to understand it. Other than an honorarium of at least $1,200, she had one other requirement, that she be able to drive to the location of her lecture with not more than one overnight stop on the way to or from. This meant she rarely went farther south than Richmond or farther west than Cleveland. One night in a motel was tiring but acceptable. 2 made her useless for a week. And Fritzy, her cat, hated keeping house by himself. This he made clear when she came home, twining between her feet on the stairs and often making promiscuous use of his claws when he sat in her lap. And although Patsy McLean from next door was very good about feeding him, he rarely ate much until Tess came home. It wasn't that she was afraid of flying, or hesitant about billing the organizations that engaged her for travel expenses, just as she billed them for her motel rooms. Always nice, never elegant. She just hated it. The crowding, the indignity of the full-body scans, the way the airlines now had their hands out for what used to be free, the delays, and the inescapable fact that you were not in charge. That was the worst. Once you went through the interminable security checkpoints and were allowed to board, you had put your most valuable possession, your life, into the hands of strangers. Of course, that was also true on the turnpikes and interstates she most always used when she traveled. A drunk could lose control, jump the median strip, and end your life in a head-on collision. They would live. The drunks, it seemed, always did. But at least when she was behind the wheel of her car, she had the illusion of control. And she liked to drive. It was soothing. She had some of her best ideas when she was on cruise control with the radio off. "I bet you were a long-haul trucker in your last incarnation," Patsy McLean told her once. Tess didn't believe in past lifetimes, or future ones, for that matter. In metaphysical terms, she thought what you saw was pretty much what you got. But she liked the idea of a life where she was not a small woman with an elfin face, a shy smile, and a job writing cozy mysteries, but a big guy with a big hat shading his sunburned brow and grizzled cheeks, letting a bulldog hood ornament lead him along the million roads that crisscross the country. No need to carefully match her clothes before public appearances in that life.